You saw those gold shot platen on the wall, and then he appeared, and it was like, oh, that's Frank Fine, that's the Boney M dude, all right. So instinctively, we looked at him as the father figure. But early, really quick, we realized that he wasn't. He was an abusive father. So it was like, oh man, what did we do? Father is not a nice dad. He's abusive. He's choleric. All right, on top of what we're into. So now we fast forward in the future and I have to recover. I have to deal with what happened to me. It took me years. And you know what happens with the person that abused you? There's a system. And the system is you have to forgive the abuser. And that's the way. And for me, it was so difficult. But every road led me to this decision. You have to forgive him and the others in order for you to move forward in your life.
Hallo ihr Lieben. Herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Folge von Road to Glory. Eine Folge, mit der ich ein Experiment wage und zu der ich mich über euer Feedback deshalb ganz besonders freuen würde. Zum ersten Mal könnt ihr in meinem Promi-Talk nämlich ein Gespräch hören, das ich komplett auf Englisch geführt habe. Denn mein heutiger Gast ist Fab Marvin, der Ende der 80er Jahre gemeinsam mit Rob Pilatus zum Megastar wurde. Mit Songs wie Girl You Know It's True, Blame It on the Rain oder Girl I'm Gonna Miss You stürmten Milli Vanilli weltweit die Spitzenplätze der Charts und gewannen im Februar 1990 sogar einen Grammy als Best New Artist. Im November 1990 platzte dann die Bombe. Produzent Frank Farian verkündete auf einer Pressekonferenz, dass Rob und Fab auf den Hits, die sich weltweit mehr als 30 Millionen Mal verkauft hatten, nicht einen Ton selbst gesungen hatten. Bis heute gilt die Enthüllung als einer der größten Skandale der Musikgeschichte. Ein Skandal, aus dem am Ende nur Fab als mental gestärkter Mensch hervorging. Der über Jahre schwer depressive Rob Pilatus starb dagegen 1998 in einer Mischung von Alkohol und verschreibungspflichtigen Medikamenten. Mehr als 35 Jahre nach Gründung der Band ist die Geschichte von Milli Vanilli nun erneut ein Top-Thema. Dafür sorgen eine neue Dokumentation auf Paramount Plus, ein Greatest Hits-Album und der Film Girl You Know It's True, der im Dezember in die Kinos kommt und in dem Matthias Schweighöfer als Frank Farian zu sehen ist. Wir sprechen über Fab Marvins frühe Jahre in Deutschland, ein gnadenlos hartes Musikbusiness, das junge Menschen verheizt, seine frühe Flucht vor der Realität in den Drogenmissbrauch, die Kunst, anderen Menschen vergeben zu können und über Produzent Frank Farian, der zunächst eine Vaterfigur für Fab und Rob war, deren Vertrauen dann aber brutal missbrauchte. Fab Marvin verrät, wann er die Schatten der Vergangenheit endgültig hinter sich lassen konnte, was und wer ihm die nötige mentale Stärke gab, die Zeit nach dem Skandal mit nicht enden wollenden öffentlichen Demütigungen zu überstehen und weshalb Rob, der für ihn immer wie eine Art Bruder war, diese Stärke nicht entwickeln konnte und an dem Skandal zugrunde ging. Findest du es gut, wenn ich in Zukunft ab und zu auch mal Interviews mit englischsprachigen Prominenten anbiete oder ist es dir lieber, wenn ich deutschsprachig bleibe? Lass es mich bitte unbedingt wissen. Hast du meinen Podcast bereits abonniert? Dann freue ich mich riesig. Falls nicht, dann hole das doch bitte jetzt nach, damit du in Zukunft garantiert keine neue Folge mehr verpasst. Und jetzt wünsche ich dir inspirierende Unterhaltung mit Fab Marvin.
Du hörst Road to Glory. Als Journalist mit 20-jähriger Berufserfahrung hat Alexander Nebel hunderte von Interviews mit nationalen und internationalen Stars geführt. Unter der Überschrift Deine persönliche Erfolgsstory spricht er hier in seinem Podcast mit inspirierenden Prominenten über Erfolg, prägende Wendepunkte und Lebensweisheiten. Gute Unterhaltung mit einer neuen Folge von Road to Glory mit Alexander Nebel.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to Road to Glory.
Hello, hello, Road to Glory. I like that. To the shores of victory.
So we will talk today about your career, about your amazing journey with ups and downs. And sure. I'm really looking forward to speak to you today. Fab, what did you want to be when you were a little boy? What was your first career wish or anything you can remember?
Okay. If I can go as far as I can remember, I wanted to become an archaeologist.
When you were like seven or eight?
Yeah. I was a bookworm because I thought that there was always more out there. When I look up in the sky, you know, I looked at those, you know, look at the moon, and then I would read about, you know, our solar system and the galaxies. And I was thinking, are we alone in the universe? And I thought like, nah, we can't be. So then, after wanting to become an archaeologist and excavating the proof of earlier civilizations and getting into, you know, Superman and Marvel comics, Then I was like, okay, maybe I want to become a geneticist. Maybe I can turn into a superhero.
That sounds very interesting.
You know?
But then you discovered that you have also the talent to entertain people. So can you remember when that started, when you realized I have this gift and people
watch me,
they listen to me?
So my dad used to play like Otis Redding. My mom used to play Mary Callas, and she used to take me to theaters. And then there was a song, and it was about D'Artagnan, and it was opera. So I kind of got exposed to opera at a young age, and I was like, oh, I like it. Je suis. You know, I was like, oh, that's cool. That sounds cool. But my mom used to play.
Really,
my mom used to play Bob Marley. Don't worry. And I was like, oh, that's cool, man. This guy. And my mom used to play this cassette, and it was Bob Marley and the Wailers, and all the songs were there.
So your parents connected you to music?
My parents connected me to music. And then I would go in the Caribbean. My grandfather was an accordionist player. And he played during Carnival. They would play like those shows. And then my parents, that were very strict, turned into children upon listening to music. And then suddenly the parental wall that was between them and me, my brothers and sisters, disappeared. And they were smiling, they were dancing. I was like, oh my God, my mom dances. Oh, that's weird. But then I would go back to my grandfather on stage playing the accordion and be like, wow, man, what is that? I want some of that.
Cool. And can you remember how old were you then? Were you maybe 5 or 6, or was it a little bit later?
Later, I think it was 10 years old.
Click and you realized, wow, this is so cool and I want to do this.
That's right.
Also.
And then I was like, then I was listening to more radio. Radio Gaga.
Queen,
you know?
Classic, yeah.
Queen classics, like, wow. Another one past the duster. You know, it was like, wow. You know, it was like, oh my God. And then you had, like Michael Jackson, you know, Off the Wall, PYT, Jackson 5, Heartbreak Hotel.
So the fire
was
started deep inside you.
But what was crazy, I would listen to everything. Sex Pistols, you know, like... God Save the Queen.
So a big variety of different music influences.
Saxon, Beatles, Led Zeppelin, you know. And I was like, oh, this is cool. I love all that. You know, so I was just eating it up. And then trying to sing those songs. Of course.
I've read that you moved from Paris or from France to Munich in a very young age with 18. Okay, it's not super young, but it is, you were quite young. And I was wondering, what was the impulse, the kickoff that you made the decision to go to Germany? Because you could have also have gone to London or maybe to New York or to any other places. Why Munich? Why Germany?
Well, I had some friends and I was dancing. Okay. Mm-hmm. And, they told me, hey, you want to go to Germany? Like, you know, you might be able to make some money teaching. I was like, cool. So I thought I would do that in like later on. But then I got in a fight with my parents and I was like, man, I can't take it anymore. I wanted to break out. I'm 18. When I'm 18, I'm out.
Freedom.
Freedom. So when I got to 18, I just, you know, ventured and went over there, went to Fürth, world famous.
World famous.
Nuremberg, you know, and then...
So typical there, Bavarian. Nuremberg is so Bavarian.
That's right. I landed in Bavaria. Yeah. And there I there was a teacher needed, and then I taught, and I was like, I made some Deutschmark. And, you know, before it was the French francs, it was the Deutschmark, and the Deutschmark was always like twice as much. Yeah. So when I went back to Paris, I was like counting my money. I was like, wow, that's a lot. So then I kept, you know, I had a few more opportunities and I went back with the guys that I was with and then we decided to go to München, eine schöne Stadt.
Now we celebrate 35 years of Milli Vanilli, the big anniversary. And when you listen to classics, to the bangers like Girl, You Know It's True or Blame It on the Rain, all these super hits, what kind of feelings do you have? Because I assume that you have mixed feelings. You have very warm and great feelings. But of course, we all know the story of Milli Vanilli. I think it might be a little mixed up.
Let's unpack that a little bit.
Yeah.
There was a time long, long ago, many moons ago, when...
Far, far away.
Exactly. Where it was very painful for me to hear those songs, even to see the videos. So it took me years to be able to look at those videos. I couldn't. Until I was approached by promoters saying, hey, you know, wouldn't you like to perform those songs? And I was like, ah, damn. I don't know. So it took a little, but I took a leap of faith and said, okay, I'm going to do it, you know. And then I did it and I enjoyed it. And I felt like, wow, it feels good. And the fans were like, oh, so cool. Thank you for coming. We love those songs. And that was not the reaction I was expecting because of the fact that back in the days when the scandal broke out, the narrative in the press and on television was one of the fans hate Robin Farah. Milli Vanilli is no more. And I was like, so I took it personally. And the fact that it was a narrative. And what is a narrative? It's a story that's being constructed. And the media went after Robin Fab being the bad guys.
When in fact, the bad guys. And all the other guys who were involved, they just hid it. And you were...
They ran away to the woods.
I will come to that later because okay. I think it's really unfair.
Very
and
unfair.
You guys were really treated in a very, very bad way.
I
followed that scandal. And I felt really sorry for you, I have to say, because I really loved Milli. I still love the songs.
That's right.
And I think it's so fucked up. But
yeah, so to go back to my journey, loving the song and rediscovering the song and turning the songs into... mine. So as I would perform it year after year by myself, then I joined John Davis. You know, while I was performing with John Davis, then, you know, I was approached by an agent in Holland and be like, hey, do you want to perform with a band? I was like, hell yeah. I've been waiting for someone to just, you know, give me the opportunity. And then this agent, Mark van den Berg, just put a band, selected some musicians who work with all the top artists in Holland. And then I started perform with the band, performing throughout Europe, doing festivals. And that's what you see in a documentary. At the end of the documentary, you
Paramount
see me.
Paramount Plus, right?
On Paramount yeah, Plus, yeah. And you see me perform Blame It on the Rain. Mm-hmm. So people come to me now and say, yeah, how come you didn't sing on the record? Because you sound great. And I'm like, oh my God, you want to unpack that right now? It's a long story. So through the years and performing live, you know, I started to make those songs. So when I would go into the studio rehearsing with the band, I said, I want to flip that like that. I want to sing it like this. I want to put some ad-libs there. And then I turn it into me now. So it's a glorious journey, you know. And now when I
journey with a lot of highs and, of course, it's totally downfall and all, I think years of
that's really right.
painful years with all the
painful
things we've read and learned about you. So I have to ask you, were there some times when Milli Vanilli was on top, everyone loved you and you were worshipped and you were the hottest shit in town. Was there a time that you guys really could enjoy this triumph, or was this always this thought, well, we all know this story, so was it really,
well, you know,
were able to enjoy it at
well,
least a little bit? Or
it started like this, yeah. You know, it was all fine and dandy. Let me unpack that as well. You know, we came from a background where Rob was adopted, lived for 4 years in an orphanage. I didn't get that much love growing up because my parents were divorcing. It was not a balanced household. So, you look for love.
Of course.
You know?
We all look for love.
We all look for love, right? Yeah, so music gave me love and it helped me. It helped me and helped me until this thing came into my life, Milli Vanilli. And then I tasted that love that was given to me so freely and so nicely. The fans were screaming my name, Robin Fab. I was like, wow, that feels... So we were seduced by that love, even though... Coming into the game, we just wanted to do that one song, walk away of the bad situation we entered. So we thought that, okay, we're going to enter and then we're going to get out real quick. Well, we got deeper into it, not
because
knowing.
Because you guys were super successful. I guess
real quick.
You recorded that there was this first single and it was just a try and then it was a worldwide super smash and then...
So fast. So yeah, you know, we used to look Formula 1, you know?
Very famous German show. Now it's, of course, a... part of history.
Exactly.
A little bit older people, they still know yeah. Formula 1, Formula 1. Yeah, it was huge.
Exactly. Ganz berühmt, meine Damen und Herren. You know, and I saw one morning, we look at us, we entered because, you know, it used to show the 20 parts in the 20th place in the charts. And then I think we were at 17. I was like, oh my God. Schau mal. Wir sind da. And then, damn, Milli Vanilli. And then every week, so we got the calls like, oh, you got to go on the road. You got to do this. You got to do that. You got to get out.
And the machinery started, right?
It started. Mm-hmm. So they put us in a pipeline and here you go. You go. You're hungry. And, you know, we had no money. struggling. So you press number four, you know, hello, yes. What do you want to eat? Oh, I want this, 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 and that.
This
everything comes
sweet
up.
Life or
man, rock star life. Yeah, my
of course,
God.
And it's very tempting. And
very tempting. Seductive. Yeah, yeah. Seduced us.
1990, you guys won the Grammy for Best New Album. It was the peak of your success. And yeah, everyone thought, wow, and now they're in the Olymp of pop business. And after that, it came out that you and Robin actually never sung the tracks. And it was one of the biggest scandals in music history. So, and it was a huge stampede. It was a tsunami of articles. And every
Black,
TV station
the Black
was
Clash,
reporting about
it.
You.
Yeah.
But when did you and Rob first realize that you were stuck in a kind of trap, that things couldn't go on like this in the long term?
You
already talked about it. It was planned as a one shot, and then everything went in a positive way out of control, because of course it was a sweet life and you guys
ruled
the world. But I think there must have been a place in your back head where you thought, oh my goodness,
for sure,
where is this
the thing is when we signed this recording contract, there was no managers, no attorneys. The contract was in German. I didn't speak German that well to read a recording contract, right? So it started all there. There was no protection. So we thought we were going to get out of the situation, and we stayed because we were seduced by everything, right? But the dream to sing was still there. So with the naivety that we had before, and the belief that, okay, let's stay in there and see how we can navigate. Maybe he's going to let us sing. And we try that. That is idea verrückt.
You guys still had hopes that will be
Letting us
nice
sing.
And say, okay, now we,
got it. Exactly.
And now I'll let you
but
have
we were,
your time.
Yeah, we were received like this idea verrückt. You know, what do you want? It's impossible. There's other voices there, so it's impossible. So we said, okay, let's keep that going, and we're going to see where we're going to land. And single after single, it got bigger and bigger.
Guys were so huge.
Oh,
in the
my
States.
God.
It was
so
unbelievable.
So then we went to America.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and
of course, you were big in Germany, but you were even bigger in the States. It was
that's right.
Insane.
So when we landed in America, we went to the MTV Music MTV Tour. And then from the MTV Tour, we had 107 cities with the Robin Fab Tour as opener. And people opening for us. And then it was like we were away from Frank, so we were more in control and talking to, you know, label and trying to get into another situation. But when Frank heard of this new situation, I don't know if he really truly heard, but he came at a time where we were working on putting something else together, and it stopped everything. Now we landed on the black list, we're blacklisted, and nobody wanted to touch us anymore. We were like lepers, like, oh no, oh God, no. Run! And that's what happened.
But how did you guys deal with this incredible pressure that was put on you as pop stars who had to function? You know, you're already told that you were huge in the States, and you had this tour, and you had to hide the secret.
So,
I think that must be insane for you guys, because you always felt this kind of pressure. And
well, the way you do this is when you discover drugs and drinking, you're like, oh, that's nice. Escapisms. So you're like, it's medication. Oh, I don't have to feel this anymore. Oh, then you numb yourself. So you look for numbing. And numbing, okay, let's party. You numb yourself to a point where you can escape, you can disappear. And then the secret on the chest that you carry on your shoulders gets lighter. Oh, that's cool. So you keep doing that. Until sometime you can find yourself in a situation where, ooh, that's kind of dangerous to do that. I felt like my heart was racing really out of control.
You never know if you really have the good stuff there. So of course, there are some drugs around who are not so safe, right?
And you know,
of course, it's never good to do drugs.
Never.
We don't want to talk about drugs like that's okay for everyone. But of course, this is rock and roll.
It's rock and
pop
roll.
And pop business.
And you know what happened is you meet dealers, because they know when there's rock stars, you have dealers, and they give you the stuff for free. Oh, it's free? Yeah, go ahead, man. Go ahead. Yeah, it's cool, man. And then you get it, and then next time they're like, you're like, hey, man, can I have some? They're like, no, you got to pay, man. I'm like, oh, okay, but I want to forget what I'm into right now. So you can, I tell you what, every city where we went, we could tell you dealer's right there. That's the guy right there. And Rob would be like, would go like, hey, man. Oh, yeah, yeah, of course, man. What do you need?
Unbelievable. It's,
that's how it develops.
Of course, I will talk to you a little more detail about Frank and, of course, about, well, he was like a brother, Rob, who passed away.
He was my, you know, we went as brothers of soul.
Yeah. So it must be devastating for you to lose him 25 years ago. It's unbelievable how time flies.
Time flies.
But I want to know, how did you manage to pull yourself out of this dark hole after the scandal and all the negative headlines? Because this must be really devastating for you. You tasted the sweet life. You were on the Olymp. You were the biggest stars. And which people helped you? What did you have an inner circle? Because you are here sitting here with me and you're doing great. You look great.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
And so I feel really lucky that you made it to get out of this shit. Sorry to have to
say that.
How did you manage that?
I feel lucky too, man.
But I think it was a long journey, right?
It was a very long journey. And to go back to where it all started, the recovery, I met a few people in my life. And people sometimes that come into your life will inspire you to do better. So I met my manager back in the days, like early on, Kim Marlowe. And, you know, just like on a football field, you know, you got, it's teamwork. So you got a quarterback. And, you know, I'm the running back. But in the end, if I don't bring that ball into the touchdown, ladies and gentlemen, nothing's going to happen. So it was my responsibility, my own responsibility to take it there.
You have sparring partners, but it has to come out of yourself.
It has
right?
to come from you.
You have to do the choices.
That's right. And then when I found, when I finally realized that I have the strength to do this, then I focused my mind, like laser focused on, okay, what do I have to do? And she helped me a whole lot, you know. So I worked on, you know, songwriting. I worked on playing the guitar. I worked on producing music. Then I went on to produce my first solo album, Love Revolution. And then I moved on and moved on and moved on and always challenged myself. Music saved my life. I'll say it again. But before that album, Rob and I recorded an album called We Can Get It On. But Rob was not
1992, right? Or 93?
Yeah, 93 or so. Yeah, exactly. So when in the process of doing that, that's when I realized like, yo, I love this. I want to stay there, you know? So I stayed in there. I sang, wrote, and sang most of every lead and background in that record because Rob was not feeling well. It was really, it was losing himself, you know? It was tumbling down.
Sad story.
So sad.
He was, I think his parents passed away very early. He was living in several families. And
well, what happened was...
Stepmothers and a stepmother. He was very... He was also looking for love, and it was even more terrible for him to have this superstar status and then fall down to nothing.
So. But I think that with Rob, I think because the love wasn't there, they gave him up early on in his life because the mother couldn't raise him, you know, so... Yeah. She had to give him up for adoption.
She didn't pass away. She had to give him
to give him up.
Yeah, okay.
So then, you know, you live in an environment like this one, which is not really nice. There's no love. So then there's this void, this hole that you try to fill. And when that fame came around, then you fill it up with that. But I think that so much love came that he couldn't handle it. So when he couldn't handle it, in order to like try to find balance with this thing that it was kind of unknown to him, he lost himself and it was confusing. And then he hung out with the wrong people and kept on going.
It was a crazy roller coaster ride for you guys, right, Eva? For you also.
Yeah, for me too. But I was like, I can't go where he goes. It's too dark and it's too destructive. So, you know, music made me feel good. I go back to being, you know.
I feel so lucky for you because I think you really deserve it. And we talk about your album from 93 and you did a great job. You have a great voice. So I think
it's
so unfair that you were stuck in this trap and you are talented and you had to pretend. And of course you are an entertainer. You were entertaining.
Yeah, of course.
You were Milli Vanilli. Of course, the other guys made the vocals and they were good, no doubt about that. But you guys,
But you know, I'd like to address that too.
Yes, please.
You know, as bad as we felt when we were asked not to sing, can you imagine going to those professional singers that were working with Frank? you know? And
in
it's
your
like
face. You were too ugly for a
Oh my God, whatever that was for them. Like, so they work in a studio, they're recording, and they think, I'm like, oh man, those songs are great. No, you're not going to sing. Why? And Frank was not one to discuss and say, hey, yeah, we're going to pay you here. You're going to get that money. And ich bin der Macher. So, schleich dich. Halt die Maul. You know, and that's it. You had to respond to orders with Frank. And that was it. And they were like, okay, it's Frank. There's money there for me. I'm working and I need to work. And I'm not going to go against the hand that's going to feed me.
But talking about Frank, in the beginning, I think the producer Frank Farian, who's very famous in Germany, I only have to mention Boney M. Everybody
right.
in Germany knows
Everyone
Boney
knows,
M. They
yeah.
were so huge. He was a kind of father figure, right? So it must
yeah.
be, despite everything that happened back then to you, have you forgiven in a way? Or have you made peace with this chapter, Frank? Or do you still would love to wait for that moment when he calls you and said, you know, Fab, I'm so sorry. I made so many things so wrong and I feel guilty and I want to say sorry. Is that a kind of thing that you really Ooh. Would love
you
to
have,
happen? Or have you made peace with that?
You have a few questions
yeah,
in there.
No.
All right. So here we go. When we entered the studio for the first time, we saw those gold Schallplatten on the wall. We're like, wow. And then he appeared, and it was like, oh, that's Frank Farian, that's the Boney M. dude, all right. So instinctively, we looked at him as the father figure. But early, really quick, we realized that he wasn't. He was an abusive father. So it was like, oh, man, what did we do?
So you realized that quick.
Really quick. Yeah. Father is not a nice dad. He's abusive. He's choleric. He's not a nice guy. Oh, damn. All right. On top of what we're into. Okay. So now we fast forward in the future and I have to recover. I have to deal with what happened to me. It took me years. And you know what happens with the person that abused you? There's a system. And the system is you have to forgive the abuser. And that's the way. And for me, it was so difficult. But every road led me to this decision. You have to forgive him and the others in order for you to move forward in your life.
Find your inner peace, right? To be
yes.
open to the good things
yeah,
in
yeah,
life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, to be able to retrieve your self-esteem, which is very small. You don't love yourself. Mm-hmm. You can move forward. So once I understood and once I gained and acquired emotional intelligence, I gained my self-esteem back, and that's when I was able to move forward, thanks to music. Because when I was writing my songs with Love Revolution, I wrote a lot of songs. I'm like, that's for the project, that's not for it. But I used this time to get a lot of pain out. I even started to paint and to draw. And with each painting comes a poem. And that's how I was able to get the pain out and the sorrow and the regrets out of my system. So it was a healing process. And there I was like, okay, I still have emotional scars, but I think that time heals all wounds and I'm going to keep going on this journey. Keep music in your life. Keep it close. And at some point, I'm going to turn my growth into something and people are going to recognize, oh man, I should work yeah. with that dude. He's not bad.
The positive energy, I can feel it also.
Listen,
really?
For me, yeah. I'm at a point where I've learned that there are no problems. And when you can switch that mindset, there are no problems, only solutions, then you can approach things differently as opposed to come from a place where like, oh my God, how am I going to do pobrecito, pauvre moi, poor me? That's not a good one. So playing the victim is the wrong place
Absolutely,
to go.
Absolutely, but it's quite hard to make that mind switch to realize
yeah,
that.
Yeah, true,
a lot
true,
of people
true.
Struggle with that. But do you think that Frank, you talked about him as an abusive father, and I'm really with you because I read a lot of things about him too, but he still doesn't really understand what he did to you and Rob, or
okay.
that he has brought heavy guilt on his shoulders because he basically destroyed Rob's life. He's dead now, and that's, of course, not only his fault, but he is, of course, it's an important factor for all the
again,
pain.
And, yeah. Again, you know, Frank Farian is an enigmatic character. And I've learned a few things by going through this healing process of filming the documentary that is on Paramount Plus now. And that is that early on in his career, he was doing Schlager. Okay? But his love was into black music. So I think he did a few things and he went to the label and the label was like, "Na spinnst du?
Du bist kein, crazy man.
Du bist kein Farbiger. Dream on. You know, you got to be black to me, that kind of music." So the creative artist that he is, he was like, okay, so I can't do that. So then with Boney M, he was like, okay, I'm going to pick people. I'm going to design this thing. And then the guy is not going to sing those vocals so that I'm going to be able to live my dream. And it was twisted. And in the process, you know, maybe he didn't know what he was doing or starting to do, but it worked. And it worked so good and so good. And I'm sure for him, it kind of satisfied him as an artist. And it's like, whoa, look what I did. And then records after records, he kept on doing it and he became more and more successful. So I can see how my dude just reveled in the success and maybe turned into like, man, I'm a genius. He started believing his own press, but not realizing, hey, listen, man.
But he uses people.
Yeah, he used people. I call that using someone a means to an end. He used a human life to live his dream, the way he wanted to live his dream. Now, fast forward. Robin Fab, Milli Vanilli. I'm going to do the same thing. But now I want to enter the American market, which I didn't do with Boney M. I'm going to get some American voices, some soul singer. Mm-hmm. Blame it on the rain, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, okay, we're going to do that. All right. I'm going to start recording. I'm working on my plan, but I don't have the faces yet. But we're going to start recording anyways. Bam, Robin Fab entered the studio. Na super, na kalta.
Here they are.
Da sind die. Das ist genau, was ich suche.
They're looking good. They're looking great.
Oh my God, we're going to do well.
And these guys can move.
They can move. They got everything. So like a designer, think of a designer, right? But let's go with that. Charles Shaw rapped on Girl Knows True. When Charles Shaw didn't behave, Frank said, "Raus damit, geh weg." So then Charles Shaw became the hat in the outfit. Then I'm going to go look for another singer. War nicht gut. Ich suche nach jemanden. John Davis. Okay, John Davis, you're going to come in. You're going to do the rest. You're the jacket. Brett Al, who was working with Frank already for a while. So Brett Al knew Frank is going to treat me well. There's money at the end of the tunnel. Kein Problem. Mahmet. Okay, then he becomes the pants. Robin Fab. The brooch, the scarf, and now the outfit is perfect.
Now my plan is completed, and
you know, like
fits
a
together.
Like a mad scientist.
Yeah, true.
Okay,
Frankenstein. What built this perfect creature? Right?
Perfect this creature. That creature, and that creature starts to like you know, you've seen Frankenstein. Yeah, that's gesehen. And he crawls. You don't know how to speak, and all that. And suddenly, man, Frankenstein is running. Boom, 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 is rocking the house. But you know, in the story, when you look at Frankenstein, Frankenstein wants, er will ein Bride. He wants to marry. And if I can make an analogy, the bride is the dream. There is more. I want to be free from Frankenstein. What did I do to myself? You know, what did I do? And you look at Frankenstein's body, do you have all those scars? And it was confusion, total internal confusion. How do we get away from there? How do we get free from Frank? America, United States of America, welcome, where everybody can live their dreams. So we thought, let's go to America, and maybe we're going to be able to get free from Frank, you know?
Unfortunately, that didn't work.
Oh, man.
Yeah. But how difficult was it for you to build up a deep trust in other people, to build that up in a new way? Because you guys, you were betrayed. And I think when the scandal came out, all the people around Milli Vanilli, all the creative guys, Frank Farian, everyone said, okay, bye-bye, guys. You are now in this shitstorm and you are the only one who have to be blamed. So I think you guys must have felt really in a very bad way betrayed. In a
well,
very
look
bad,
at it.
You must have I'll felt give, betrayed,
I'll
right?
Betrayed. I give you a great analogy. Robin Fab were emotionally children, kids. So imagine the playground is Earth. The two kids being bullied are Robin Fab. So Robin Fab had been bullied. And then you're being kicked out of the playground. You're like, hey, we don't want you anymore. So we're outside behind bars, almost like in jail. We're in a cage and we're looking and we're crying out for help. Please help me. Help me. Can someone hear me? Help me. What did we do? Okay, I know. We know what we did wrong, but please, someone help me. They did wrong too. They did wrong too. Why us? Why are we treated this way? Is it because we're black? Is that the reason? If Paul and John would have done that, it would have been different. And then being in America, I would hear that. I'd be like, yeah, you know, guys, if you guys were white, it would have been very different. And I'm like, really? Why? And then I didn't want to go down this gauntlet because it would get even more confusing, because I know America was confusing to a point where, I give you a simple example. Rob and I would go to clubs and we'd be in a booth sitting by each other. We're pals. We put our arms around, like, just like this on a booth. And the record company would say, like, hey, you can't do that. And I was like, what do you mean we can't do that? No, no, you have to move your arm. People are going to think you guys are gay. Okay. I was what?
Was the end of the 80s still a very conservative,
feeling? Like, you
of course,
can't
there's
go.
Still some spots in the States where they're still really conservative.
Conservative. Yeah, then we would go, we would say, hey, we're going to go to clubs. Mm-hmm. Like, and we used to go to Ibiza. So it's like, hey, man, where can we get some house music? And then we find out. And then the next day, the label would hear, like, you guys went to a house club, but it's a gay club. And I'm like, what is the problem? There were girls. We were with girls. It's like, nah. For the image, you can't go to those clubs. People are going to think you're gay. Okay. Now we're hanging out with white girls. You know, you live in Europe. So we dated white girls and like, we're going to have to put black girls in the video because you have white girls in your video. And I was like, man, this place is weird. Like, why do we... Hey, this is the way things are in America, you know?
Interesting. Yeah.
It's the way it is. So I've been exposed to so many things. So we look at Milli Vanilli, there were so many layers. And we were on MTV, Michael Jackson. And the story is, when Michael Jackson did a crossover, the label said, hey, if you don't put Michael Jackson on MTV, we're going to remove all our acts. And then he landed on MTV. Then Milli Vanilli came around.
So perfect timing.
Perfect timing. So artists like us, there were not many who were able to cross over. So the reach was incredible. We landed into so many households at the beginning. So it was weird. And I've been told, if my father knew I was here with you in bed, he would kill you and kill me afterwards. So it wasn't well seen to have a black man and a white woman together.
You know, everyone who has read a lot about the story about Milli Vanilli and about you guys knows that you and Rob, you were like brothers. You already told that
like
to me.
Like brothers.
And when he died in 1998, how hard was it for you when you couldn't help him in the end? Because it was I think it took a lot of years. And it was every time there was, I think, some signs when you thought, well,
oh, yeah,
he will make it and things are improving and he's on the right track now. But then it went all downhill. So what did that with you? I think that must be devastating for you to lose your brother.
It was so difficult. But I had done my work. And by going to rehabilitation centers with him together, I was told, codependency is real. If you don't take care of yourself, you're going to end up where he is at. We can tell that you don't have as much of a problem. So take care of yourself, because you're going to, in order to save him, you're going to go hang out with him. And if you hang out with him, you're going to hang out with the people that do what they do. And it seems like you want to really stop. So you got to stop hanging with Rob. And I was like, oh my God, really?
That's really
my brother. Yeah. How am I going to do that? You got to do that. If you want to save him and be the example, he might look at you and be, oh, okay, brother is getting his shit together. Maybe I need to do the same thing. So by showing him, hey, look, I'm in the studio, I'm doing this, you know, check it out. This is what I'm doing right now. I thought I could inspire him. But he saw no hope in going back into the music business, because he was so hurt and saw no future, no immediate future. But I said, if you don't see any future and do it, well, do the work and see how you're going to feel different about everything. Doing what you do is not helping you. You're not clear. I'm getting clarity and I can see there's life after Milli Vanilli. There is really life. But it was like, nah, man, I don't see it. I don't see myself. I don't think anything is going to happen.
He was a broken man. I think he died when he was 33 or 34. He was a very young man.
He was very young.
He was broken.
You know what I say?
Mentally broken.
I use this analogy. He died of a broken heart. He died brokenhearted because he didn't see any hope. He thought that we got betrayed. You know, we were betrayed. And he saw that, you know, we were part of the family. And, you know, him coming from an orphanage and landing into a musical family like we have with Frank and with Ingrid. We thought like mother and going up and seeing them as mother and father. You know, well, it didn't turn out to be that. That's why he didn't love himself for that. But, you know, and he did the work. But every time addiction called his name, I don't want to feel what I feel right now. Hey, come with me. Come hang out. That's what it was. So he hang out with the wrong people. And I stopped.
Do you think that he was on drugs until he died? Or was there a time when he was sober and when he really recovered? Or is that not, is that too hard to answer for you? Because, yeah, of course, no. You haven't been around 24/7.
No, he was always, you know, he tried and tried and tried and tried. And then it would pull on its chain. So when it comes to, you ask me, like, how did I feel? I was ready. I was told, listen. You have to know there's three places, there's three scenarios. The hospital, hospitalized, jail, or the cemetery. Very simple. And I was like, wow, that sounds really... He said, but that's the truth. We've been around. We know how it ends up. So don't be surprised if you get that call. So the fear of getting that...
Kind of prepared. Oh, you were kind of prepared.
I was always like, oh, please don't call me. And when I received that call... It was a shock. I couldn't hear my ring. My ears just went.
Surrealistic.
It was surreal.
Unreal situation.
You know, because it felt like I had lost a limb. He wasn't here. The person that I could confine myself to that gone down the same gauntlet as I had gone, who walked in my shoes, who felt like
he
I
was
felt.
The only one who really could feel what you felt, and he understood you completely.
He understood me completely.
No one, I think, could ever really understand what you guys went through and how this was. Must be an insane time in your life.
And you know, I kept telling him, yo, bro, one day we could laugh about this. We could reminisce. There's life after this. We could laugh. But he didn't see it.
I was wondering, do you think that the major scandal of 1990, would it be a big deal today?
Oh, man. You know how the world has changed.
Absolutely. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah. So here we go. You know, we were crucified for lip syncing. And I will address everything. I'll go down the gauntlet. Now people are celebrated for lip syncing. Social media, you know, if you do it well... TikTok, everything.
Instagram, everything. Yeah.
There can be only one who've gotten a Grammy lip syncing. That's Milli Vanilli. All right. True. Now let's look at it a little closer. The labels and the artists are now in cahoots. They work together. Now, with technology and software, I'm a producer. I'm a singer-songwriter producer. I know it's possible. You have those artists who look amazing. Oh, you guys look great. It's a business. So, don't worry, you sing? Not very well, but it's okay. What we're going to do, you're going to go in the studio. We have a vocal producer for you, and then we have a vocal specialist editor that works with out of tune, and it's going to make you sound like a dream, right?
Almost everything is possible.
Anything is possible in the studio,
talking
right?
About AI, I think it's getting
more terrifying. That's another level.
Yeah,
another level. But now... You can go on stage and perform that amazing hit. Wow. But you can't. It's not you. It's the software. Because it's done to a point where you're not doing the job. You do part of the job. And people might say, well, you know, you didn't do the job. But if you cannot do it, so we can interchange, we can take anybody in reality. No one is special. We just get the right people. You look right. Okay, boom. We can switch you with somebody else. That's where I go to now. They can switch people around. You don't even know, oh, was he in a band? No, we're taking somebody else because he behaved badly. Because, you know, the labels, if an artist behaved badly, okay, he's out. Next one. Okay, we put you here, but you match the rest. So, autotune specialist, let go. Let's
talking
go.
About auto-tune.
So there's no, what I'm addressing is like Milli Vanilli and what you guys are doing now. It's no different. And now the fact that people are celebrating. So maybe pop music was being packaged in a different way. It was the end of an era and the beginning of something. But now people took it the whole other way. So when I talk to journalists in America, rock music journalists, say, you know what? What happened to you is despicable. Because right now, they're rock bands. And you know, when you talk about rock music, rock bands, alternative bands, you think they sing, they come from the club, you know? They work their way up by playing for fans. And they're saying, man, there are a lot of bands that are lip syncing now. And they're like, that's crazy.
Interesting news.
Yeah. A lot of bands are lip syncing. Whatever the reason is, I'm not pointing the finger, but I've been told by several journalists that it's incredible. So when they look at my story, like, you know, I feel really bad for, you know, what they did to you. Because now it's common practice.
Back then, there was no social media. It was a totally different era. And I think it was even more massive because social media changed the whole game. Everything was turned upside down nowadays. But there was no social media, no TikTok. Did you still feel much hatred from disappointed fans back in the days? Or was that okay? Were there a lot of fans who really said, I love you, I still love you guys.
No.
You're great.
Let me tell you, when I watch TV, because, you know, it was about, you know, when there's a scandal, people read more newspapers. It's a business. When there's a scandal, people watch TV more. The polarization of what happened to Robin Fab was like, wow, everybody's like, oh, did you hear? The industry benefits from that, right? I believed it. Just like they believed it, the fans hate you. So when social media came around, MySpace, fans were talking to me, saying, oh man, I finally I found you. Oh man, I sent letters and I got a lot of letters from fans, but when I stopped with the management, they didn't know where to find me. So there were tons of letters coming to the office and they would call me, hey, you need to get those bags. And I'm like, I don't have space for that. There was tons of bags, fans that were reaching out. We love you. We still love you. I believe that what I saw, I believed in the narrative. So now social media now came around. And year after year, people would discover that I was alive and well and doing what I did and performing. And I would meet fans at shows, say, oh, I'm so happy I've seen you perform. I'm so happy you're still here. I'm so happy you keep those songs alive.
I think this is also one of the few aspects that made you heal, right? I think that was one
performing
part that you had this love from the fans and that
the
you
love.
Realized that
the
they
love.
Love you.
And when I realized that the fans were really there, well, I started nurturing my relationship with them and I said, oh, I'm here. And then we went from MySpace to Facebook and then we went to Instagram and then YouTube and then TikTok. Yeah. Then those places, you know, you can grab people. And then so I make new fans. And I hold on to my old fans. But one thing I hear is like, you know, I've been listening to Milli Vanilli for years. For years. It became, for some people, it was a guilty pleasure. You know?
I loved you from day one. I still love
Thank
the
you.
Songs. When
Thank
I hear
you.
This, really, they are great. They are classics. So.
Classics.
No
to this
doubt
day.
About that.
So that's why I say,
you have to dance.
I say, everybody, listen, be proud of playing Milli Vanilli. You know, it was a good time. And for the new generation that are discovering, it's an interesting story. And if my story can inspire others, then great.
I know this is a very tough question, but looking back, what was the biggest mistake that you made in your life? I think there are not really mistakes because everything has a purpose and everything was meant for
well
something.
Said.
Well,
well
what,
said.
What do you think when you look back? Was it a mistake to do this contract with Frank Farian or do you say no?
You know, it's life is weird. You know, the older you get,
weird.
Yeah, life is weird.
Super weird.
Listen, young people, you don't even know what you're walking into. But when I was young, I had no idea. I didn't know what consequences meant. So I didn't know that when I made a decision, it would be consequences to those decisions. So with time, you learn. And then you realize that, life is really complicated. So as you grow older, you start to look at the big picture. And maybe somewhere, someone said, you're going to go through this. And because of this, you're going to turn into what you were supposed to be. Once you become who you're supposed to be, I'm going to send you out and you're going to send a message to the world, a message of positivity and good vibrations, because it's about vibrations, energies, and frequency.
Fab, we need this positive energy and this message more than ever. We live in fucked up times. You know,
crazy times.
Wars all over the world, and so depressing. You know, so I celebrate this.
Yeah.
So, that you want
if
to
I can be,
positivity.
If I can be that guy, if I can be the poster boy for... If you fall, if you're confused, if you can find a way out of where you at, think of me, listen to what I got to say. I even created something called Fab Millie, FABMILLY, because, you know, I have a Fab Millie, Tessa, four kids, Sasha, Solange,
also,
Vince.
It's also really important for you. You have this There's, family and it's peace.
I got a family. Yeah. I'm at peace. And through the years, I realized that I had a system. So with Tessa, my partner, we created this thing where I take care of like the mind, she takes care of the body, and that's what she did for me. She really rehabilitated me. You know, it was a form of rehabilitations, physical as well. And I believe that everything has to do with your health. Health, mental and physical, is super important. So once you realize that it's connected, and you can achieve that by treating yourself like your best friend. You know how sometimes you treat your friends better than yourself? You got to look out for yourself. Health is all. So if you eat well, work out, sleep well, you start there and then you will start to gain clarity.
Yeah. But when did you learn to trust yourself and your inner strength completely? Because I think this must have been a really tough journey for you because of your past, and you felt betrayed, and it was such a devastating time in your life when Rob passed. So when did you really learn to trust yourself and to know, yes, I'm good and I have this power, I have this positivity? Or is it too hard to tell because
it was
a process over the years?
No, I can see clearly, you know, music saved my life. Yeah. Writing songs was the best thing I could have ever done, because not every song became a real song with a groove and a melody and arrangement. No, some of them were thoughts. And what I did by writing some of those songs, it was like, okay, let me take that out of me. Let me take the sorrow. Let me take the pain. Let me take the regrets out of it. And sometimes by doing that, I was like, ooh, that's a great song. Cool, let me turn that. So I like to write this text. It's a conversation with myself. And then sometimes it turns into something. And sometimes I'm like, oh, maybe that's too personal. I'm going to keep that over there. Maybe one day I'll turn it into something. But not for now. Boom. Okay. And then I keep writing.
But every song was perfect for you to have this journey and to recover and to feel
The songwriting and making music was very therapeutic. Okay. And with every track that I did, it gave me confidence to move forward. Yeah. And when I had the confidence into myself, I was like, okay, I can do this. And the more I evolved, people say, hey, man, that sounds good. Hey, can I work with you? I was like,
so what kind of inner force drives you? What is your, why do you do what you're doing? Is it the love for life? Is it the positivity that comes out of you? Is it the love for music? We all have our inner forces who make us tick into.
Well, you know, I had a dream that one day I would become a singer, songwriter, producer. Growing up, Bob Marley, One Love. Those songs were like it was a healer. Bob Marley to me is a healer. His music was healing. So when I realized how powerful music was, I kept it in the back of my mind and said, you know, maybe one day I can become a healer through music.
And you're in a very good way, I think, to achieve that goal.
I went through hell. Yeah. So when,
you
when
have
I'm
to pay your,
so I pay my dues. Yeah, so when I do what I do, and people come to me and say, you know what, the word. So what's interesting now is when I speak, people say, "Wow, I love what you have to say." When I sing, people say, "Oh, I love your voice." I'm like, "Damn, that's wild." I give you an anecdote. I used to work at Kiss FM Los Angeles. You're listening to Fabulous Flashback with Fab Morvan on 102.7 Kiss FM. And I was at a party and I was speaking, you know, and then this girl was like, hey, are you Fab? I'm like, yeah. And she said, are you on radio? I'm like, yeah. She said, I recognize your voice. And I was like, wow, I was recognized for my speaking voice. And then I was like, okay, I want to be recognized for my singing voice, though. You know, so keep going, bro. But eventually you will land on those radio stations, you know. So I had a dream and I never let up. And that's my message to everyone. Don't let up. Don't let up on yourself. Because when you give up, you give up on one person only. And that's yourself. I say, we live one life at a time. Live this one to the fullest, brothers, sisters. Just do it.
I'm so with you. But how much do you think of our lives as fate or as predestination, and how much is in our own hands? I think this is, of course, a very big question.
It's a big question.
There are a lot of people who say, no, I can create my own life. I have it in my own hands. But other people say, no, some things you can't really, it's not in your hands. You have this kind of fate, this predestination.
Okay, we can approach it different, in many different ways.
Philosophic question.
Yeah, philosophical. I love philosophy. I love this type of conversation. I love it. Let's go. You know, I believe in energies, frequency, and vibrations. There is a world out there that is invisible, but that is truly at work. But society tells us you have to touch everything that is happening. If you can't touch it, it doesn't exist, right? But with time, I've learned that there is an invisible world. And whatever vibrations you create, you will attract the same. So if you want to break the cycle in which you are in, negative, I don't feel well, my God, I don't want to get out of bed. I went through that. Like, oh, I don't want to talk to nobody. I want to stay in bed. So by you staying in bed, not wanting to communicate, you medicating yourself, you are losing out on life. And when you enter the light and positive vibrations, others that are with the light and with the positive say, hey, man, how you doing, man? Cool. Yeah, you feel your vibe. So when they feel your vibe, then you there's a certain camaraderie. And then you realize, oh, we have something in common. Maybe we could do something together. Or maybe it's just a friendship. And because you're around this person that makes you feel good, you stay around. But if you go around negative, you will feel negative. And I discovered that really quick. So I stopped hanging out with the wrong people. And I noticed that when I hang out with creative people, I became more creative. When I hang out with more successful people than I was on another level, they've inspired me. And I met some very talented people and that were really doing it. And that they met me and said, oh man, you're cool, man. Come into the studio. And we stay in the studio. I was like, oh, that's wow. I worked with Will.i.am. And I went to the studio and I was like, oh, that's cool. That was really inspiring. When he was working with Michael Jackson in Bahrain, I was working with Will.i.am and his team. Things didn't work out because he got so busy and, you know, Will can get sidetracked sometime. But by hanging out with them, I was like, wow, that's another level of creativity. Long haul and behold, look at what is built. So I say, hang out. My mom would say, qui traîne avec des chiens aura des, va attraper des puces. Meaning, if you hang with dogs, you will catch fleas. And I say, hang out with dogs that give you the right type of fleas, the right type of inspiration that are going to elevate you. That's what I'm talking about. And by hanging with the right people, it gave me hope and took me to another level. And because I choose the people, I handpick the people that I want to hang with, it takes me to another level. I'm not just a singer-songwriter. I paint. I love art. So sometimes you don't have to necessarily meet the people who did the art. You can be exposed. You can study. You can research how they did it. You can reverse engineer how they got there. What do they stand behind? How do they express themselves? So I think that you have to answer your question to end, is that you have to discover what you love. That's super important. Once you found what you love, you're going to put the work in. And do you know what? The work that you put into it, it ain't work anymore. It's like, I love it.
And you have it in your own hands. So it's not exactly only about fate. It's also
that's
what
right.
comes out of you.
So
right?
you do so, the work. Yeah, but yeah. Now, here we go. I like that analogy. When you put a little drop of ink in a glass of water, what happens? It takes over. And that's luck. But in order to get close to that luck, you got to build who you are. You have to, it's like showing hands. Be like, hey, I'm over here. And I emanate that type of energy. Can you feel me? Amen. And then you're going to get that type of energy. And then you make whatever you can with that energy. And then it's going to build and it's going to build and you're going to affect others. And that's my answer. And here we are.
That's an amazing answer.
Hallelujah.
I could go on for hours, but unfortunately I have to end. So thank you so much.
Pleasure.
To me.
Thank you.
I had a blast, really. And I wish you all success in the world. Successful, the documentary on Paramount Plus about Milli Vanilli and all your future musical projects as a producer and musician. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I think you deserve all the love and all the success in the world. Thank you.
Thank you, man. And how can I finish this? Like, I got to do something, man. We cannot finish this. It's a tragedy for me to see the dream is over. And I never will forget the day we met. Girl, I'm gonna miss you. It's a tragedy for me to see the dream is over. And I never will forget the day we met. Girl, I'm gonna miss you. Thank you. Believe in yourself.
Thank you.
Don't give up.
Much.
My pleasure, man. Peace.
Das war Road to Glory. Wir hoffen sehr, dass es dir gefallen hat. Wenn du auch zukünftig keine Folge verpassen möchtest, dann abonniere jetzt diesen Podcast. Wir freuen uns, wenn du ihn weiterempfiehlst und auf Apple Podcast bewertest. Du hast Anregungen oder Vorschläge für zukünftige Gäste? Dann schreibe bitte an mail@alexander-nebe.com. Bis nächste Woche.